And then it's instantly back. It's like, wait, I just emptied out the tank. How did it refill so quickly?
How did it fill so quickly?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right, so it is...
it's what?
It's June 27th.
Not Tuesday.
Wednesday, June 27th. Are my levels okay?
Levels. Sibilance.
Sibilance.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah. It's June 27th, Wednesday, June 27th. A little late this week. But it is episode 322 of On Taking Pictures. Bill Wadman is in balmy Brooklyn. Is it balmy there?
I don't know, actually. I haven't been outside today. Keep talking. I'll look it up. It is 72 degrees.
Oh, that's nice.
Cloudy, but like 60% humidity. So it's not terrible.
That's nice. Yeah. Jeffrey Sidoris in Silver Spring, where it is 74 and what's the humidity?
Are you going to change your name to Jeffrey Storm?
Jeffrey Storm. Oh, Jesus. It's going to be 93% humidity. But at least it's going up to 100% at 2 a.m.
What?
100% humidity between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Is that possible? Is that actually possible? At 100% humidity, shouldn't precipitation just happen spontaneously?
Yeah.
Isn't that called raining?
Yeah, or you're underwater. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah.
So, On Taking Pictures, 322, Bill and Jeffrey.
Okay, so... Right before we started, can we just go somewhere with the Elvis thing and then talk about the other thing?
Yeah.
Just because it's in the top of my head.
Yeah. So we were talking about Elvis Presley.
Can you read that quote again?
Yeah. So I'm listening to the Born to Run, the autobiography, Springsteen's autobiography, which is read by him, and it is fantastic. It's about 700 hours long.
Strap your hands across Jeffrey's engines.
Right. Darling, you know just what I'm here for. Do you want me to read the whole thing or just the part about the end, about what his thoughts were?
Just the end. So he's talking about Elvis Presley.
Yeah, he's talking about Elvis and he writes, and he says, because it's an audiobook, I don't know what his thoughts were on race. I don't know whether he thought about the broader implications of his actions. I do know this is what he did. He lived a life that he was driven to live and brought forth the truth that was within him and possibilities within us. How many of us can say that we committed all of ourselves to something? And I love this. I wrote it down and was telling Bill about it, and he had this to say.
I didn't say anything yet, but I was going to say...
Cue Bill Wadman.
I was going to say that I think Elvis Presley is a good example of modern myth-making.
In what way?
Well, he was so singularly popular and such a big deal at the time, right? You know, just like changed music as we know it. And of course, you know, you can talk about all the appropriating Southern black music and it's a white guy doing black music and that's why it became popular and all that stuff, right? And you could talk about how he had his ups and downs and he was big and he was in the movies and then he kind of went away for a while and then came back during the live stuff, not the Hawaii
the 68
stuff.
Comeback yeah, 68 special.
Comeback special, you know, and all that stuff. And then, you know, he's spending all his money and shooting his TV in the 70s and doing lots of drugs and hanging out with Nixon, and then he, like, dies on his toilet or whatever it is, right? He has such this crazy story
that's a very abbreviated
yes,
version.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I'm just trying to quickly encompass.
It wasn't even the highlight reel.
Yeah, it was just that was the depressing. That was like the beginning of a bad. Anyway, I think that his story was so hot flame tragic in so many ways, right? And he was such an icon during such a period of upheaval in America, which is what Springsteen's talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I wonder, people of that generation, and I was actually out with some friends last night for dinner, and we were talking about, we were kind of talking about this sort of self-myth-making subject, and one of them brought up Bob Dylan and how... You know, Bob Dylan's real name is like Robert Zimmerman. Like he's, you know, you know, this Jewish kid from Minnesota or whatever, right? And how Bob Dylan for decades talked about how he ran away and joined the circus and like did all this crazy stuff. And in actuality, he was like a university student and whatever. Like that, that there was still a time a generation or so ago where you could just like that there could be a backstory or whether it's your own creation or whether it's the creation of, I mean, Springsteen is a myth creation machine. I mean, all the songs, right? You know, the way he talks about New Jersey and getting the hell out
absolutely.
Of Dodge and all this stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all sort of in this ethereal world of non-reality, right? Even the way he's talking about somebody in reality feels like it's one of his songs and not a real person, you mm-hmm. know? And I find that totally fascinating. But so I also look at people like that and I think about, I wonder how they actually saw themselves, or if you took a really objective look at Elvis's life, whether you would wax that poetically about it, or whether he would, or whether it takes somebody like Springsteen, who's a myth-making machine, to sort of put it into words that make you step back and go, oh, that's so deep. Elvis was so deep. Maybe he
right,
was.
Right.
Maybe he wasn't.
He's,
I don't know.
But is so you're asking, is Springsteen kind of whipping up the myth?
Yeah. Well, I think Springsteen, yes. I would tend to think yes, right? But that's what Springsteen does, and that's why you go listen to Springsteen or hear him talk, right? You want that pixie dust thrown on top of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when you read that, do you hear that as Springsteen's voice, or do you hear that as an actual statement about Elvis? See what I'm saying?
Well, I think you can't have one without the other in this case, in this particular book, because prior to that, he went on about this, you know, his reaction and the world's reaction to seeing him for the first time on the Ed Sullivan Show. And,
sure.
and you know, but then there's myth around that too, where,
absolutely.
Where
people think,
you know,
they saw it and they didn't. And all,
yeah.
You know, it's
and,
like the Beatles.
And there's the whole, like, shoot him from the waist up and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you know, so I think all of it is sort of peppered with, like you said, Springsteen's ability to create story and myth.
Yeah.
One of the more accurate portrayals I've watched is the film that John Carpenter did with Kurt Russell in the title role. It's just called Elvis, from 1980, 79, something like that. And this was a troubled guy. I mean, this was a,
yeah.
you know, lots of stuff going on in his life, and was never the same when his mother died, and always felt like he was half a person because his twin brother died. And, you know, like, so all of this stuff that, you know, this, that contributes to this kind of not just a rags to riches story, but, you know, kid from Tupelo, Mississippi, becoming the greatest rock and roll star in the world.
Yeah.
And not just becoming, but staying there for decades.
Arguably defining what it is.
I mean, at least early rock and roll, sure.
Yeah. And to be there at that pivotal place. And, like, again, if it wasn't Elvis, it would have been somebody else, right? Like, the world,
right.
You could claim that the world was ripe for that kind of change. And,
yeah.
you know, they were waiting. By the way, I also want to mention the Elvis and Nixon movie from a couple of years ago.
Oh, with Michael Shannon?
Yeah, with Michael Shannon, which is actually kind of cute and fun, too, if you haven't seen that. But yeah, and I sometimes I think about this stuff a lot, because I wonder how much do we need people to be more than people? Because in some ways it seems like we do.
I think we do.
But did anybody ever actually more than that? Are we putting so much weight on people's shoulders?
Well, you could say it across the board. You know, at the core, Elvis was just, you know, a guitar player and a singer. Jordan was just a basketball player.
Right, right,
Avedon
right.
was just a photographer.
Yeah. The Beatles thing, the Paul McCartney on the Carpool Karaoke. You know that thing.
Right.
I don't know if you watched it.
I watched a little bit of it.
You know, it's McCartney being McCartney, and, you know, he's been in that role for his entire life. You know,
right.
And you know, he's singing the songs and talking about how him and John, like, wrote some song in this, you know, and, oh, we were over in this area over here, and we, you know, in this room over here that I haven't been in 20 years, and we wrote this song, and, yeah, it became this major hit. And you're just like, oh, this was just a freaking kid. He was just a kid hanging out with his other friend and writes a song, and all of a sudden the entire world turns on what they're doing. That's got to be a mind screw, no matter how you see it, you know?
Yeah.
In some ways, I feel sorry for the people who end up with all this stuff on their shoulders, because I think they get spun up into this encapsulation myth where they're inside of it. They can't get out. And I think there's a little bit of that actually in the Elvis and Nixon thing, where he's like talking to his old friend and he's like, this isn't me. This is, you know what I mean? I'm still me. Yeah, yeah. This is like this thing that has grown up on top of me, but you know.
Yeah. Like sometimes all he wanted to do was just go to the arcade and play pinball.
Exactly.
Because he was still that guy.
Yeah. And I think we like the idea of heroes, and I think we like the idea of some sort of Greek gods and whatever these people end up becoming in society and the like great person theory of history and all the rest of it. But I think sometimes I wonder whether that does us a disservice, because we stick these people up on pedestals that are way higher than they could have possibly reached on their own.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it certainly skews the definition of success. It skews. I know a lot of people who I would call successful, and it has nothing to do with how much is in their bank account, what they drive, or where they live.
Yep.
But they are absolutely successful.
Right.
And I think if you look at, you know, the Elvises, or I don't know who's giant right now. That's a modern, you know, even close to an equivalent. I don't.
Well, no one. I mean, no one quite that Beyonce. You know, but
yeah.
Even,
okay.
But even
so
then,
how many little girls want to grow up to be Beyonce?
Yeah.
And you know, while the reality is that, you know, 0.1% of them will
0.0001%,
you know, yeah,
of them.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The aspiration, if that's enough to make you study harder in school or dance a little harder or sing a little better or whatever it is, then I think it's worth it.
Right.
You know.
Well, did you? No, you have a point. God, there was something in there that I just had and just lost. It was about how, you know, every single person you hear who talks about music in the 60s and 70s, every single one of them talks about the Ed Sullivan Show Elvis thing or the Ed Sullivan Show Beatles thing. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Oh, I saw the Beatles, and it's the origin story of every musician in the 60s and 70s, it seems like, you know, that we've ever
well,
heard.
I mean, he was the influencer then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
he was the Fallon or the Colbert. No, not Fallon, because he's kind of a goof, but.
Right.
You know, whoever yeah. the talk show tastemaker is now, that's who Sullivan was.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I find the whole thing interesting. I think the whole thing, the whole idea of living at a time when there wasn't, I listened to that. I think I talked about last week quickly, the new Karate Kid thing, the Cobra
right.
Kai.
Right.
I was Cobra listening Kai. To the interview with the two of them, and they were just saying, you know, there weren't these cameras around. It was, you know, it was Teen Beat magazine. It was the worst thing.
Yeah.
And,
to recap, it's really funny if you haven't seen it, at least the first few episodes that I've seen. It's
yeah.
Funny.
I can't decide if I find it funny or sad, but it's well done. You know what I mean?
Or are you sad that you find it funny?
Yeah, I don't know. Johnny, sweep the leg. But you know, even just the idea that today, I don't know that any of that would exist in quite the same way today. Or if it does, it's, I mean, in some ways, we're all making our own myth by sticking a bunch of pictures on Instagram that are the exciting parts of our lives, you know.
Absolutely.
No one takes a picture of their peanut butter and jelly sandwich and says, this is what I'm having for lunch because there's nothing else in the cabinet.
Yeah.
Maybe Stephen Shore. But you know what I mean. It's but
or Eggleston.
But, yeah. But you see what I'm getting at, right? Like so.
Yeah,
in some ways, we're all making our own myth, especially photographically, social media wise.
Have we lost the ability to believe in myth? Have we lost the ability to conjure?
Well, I think in some ways we've that whole thing has been skewed in much the way that the political landscape and news and fact and all that stuff has been brought into this really subjective viewpoint, right? Where every fact is arguable and whatever it is. And it's like, how are you to say this isn't my life sitting on this roof deck or whatever it is? It's like, it's not your roof deck. It's just your roof deck of, you know, the woman who cleans your house and you happen to be out there and you took a picture. You know what I mean? That's not your life. That's you walking out on somebody else's roof deck. but you know, or you know, the people who rent expensive cars to have their pictures taken in them so that they can, you know, be driving a Ferrari or whatever. Right. I mean, this is insanity, right? I mean, it gets crazy because you're just like, well, what is success? What is a life? What are we trying to achieve? You know, is it just this superficial understand, like this superficial belief that of sort of this, I don't know, like the monetary success that you were talking about, you know, the skewing the definition thing.
Right, right. Well, I think it depends on what age you're at, right? I mean, yeah. I think if you asked, you know, Sean Tucker was doing a thing in London, and he went to like the schools, the career day at some of the schools in London, and he said that they asked a number of schools in London, grade schoolers, what they wanted to be when they grow up. And the number four answer on the list was YouTuber.
Right, right, right. Of which there are like a couple hundred people who make money on YouTube. The rest of Maybe. The people just make yeah. a bunch of crap.
But the definition of it itself is so amorphous.
Yeah.
What does
yeah.
it even mean?
Yeah. What's it all about, Jeffrey?
Alfie. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know my definition of success has changed as I've gotten older, what I'm concerned with has changed. You know,
from what to what?
Well, I mean, you know, when I was grade school, I wanted to be an animator at Disney, and then I wanted to work at Universal, which I mean, actually did. So that yeah. was kind of nice. But you know, I wanted to. Gosh, actually, those, you know what? Those aren't even definitions of success. Those are definitions of what I wanted to be.
Yeah. How would you even define success in one of those things? Oh, I made a movie while I
Maybe.
Disney.
Yeah.
That movie was a success. Well, what if the movie was a flop? Would making the movie in the first place be a success?
Still be a success, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think my definition now is, gosh, what would yours be? I don't know. What would mine be?
I don't know. I have a hell of a time defining any sort of definition of success. I mean, if you could say, oh, well, you know, you have pictures in a national magazine. Well, I do that now. Okay. Right. Am I a success? Well, I don't know.
Because you do that.
Yeah. You know, for some people, that's their goal. Okay. I got that goal. Now what? I
mean, now what?
Are we always upping the goal on purpose? You know what I mean? Like, is that a necessary part of it where, you know, you reach a goal, you make a new goal, or is there, you know, the whole thing of our constant subject of all this stuff is, you know, is the journey is the win, right? The journey is the whole point. And so if that's the case, then what are goals anyway? You know, just keep walking. Who cares where you end up?
I mean, maybe one definition of success is being able to be present enough to enjoy that journey.
Yeah, sure.
You know, not having to, I don't know, lose yourself in a job you hate or a relationship that's unhealthy or an illness or I don't know. But to be able to be present enough to give and receive. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, you can you can talk about success in very sort of tactile ways of like, you know, oh, well, I love my wife and, you know, my home. And like you could talk about that stuff. It's like, OK, those are all perfectly worthy things that could be your definition of success. But there's plenty of people with that who look and say, oh, I wish I had done this or had this experience or done more. And then there's people who have the experience and think, oh, I wish I had settled down and had. You can't. It's the grass is always greener, I think, to some extent. Right. Because we all live our lives.
Sure.
And you see other people who are living similar lives or completely different lives, and you go, oh, I wish I was them. And oh, look at that, you know, that guy's the or gal is the head of that company, and look at all the money they make, and they have, you know, 23 houses, and like, I wish I had that. And it's like, well,
but they could be miserable,
right?
I mean,
a lot of times
look at,
they are,
you know, Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, just in the last couple months,
exactly, right. So you're right, and then you could just generally say, well, happiness is the goal. Well, is happiness the goal? Because if you never struggle, you know, happiness doesn't have a whole lot of meaning unless there's some sort of dichotomy between
right,
it
right.
and something else, right? If you were successful all the time, I liken it to the people who are really, really beautiful all the time and people like give them stuff because, you know, they're beautiful and that's the way that works in our world. And it's like, they don't even realize this huge gift that they get every day because they've never known anything different, right? You know, it's just a reality of their lives. So if they have no context to put that in, they don't see it as anything special. And I think a lot of us don't see the lives that we lead as anything special, you know, because it's all we know. It's kind of like when you're growing up and you have a family and you think that, oh, the way my parents and I are, that's what families are, right? Because that's all I've ever known. Right.
And ostensibly it is normal because it's your normal.
Exactly. Yeah. But then you grow up and you see other people with their parents and, you know, they don't call their parents dad. They call him Chuck. And you go, well, that's weird. And, you know, and
especially because his name's Pete.
You know, and you know, and Chuck's a hippie and, you know, doesn't yell at him about having long hair or whatever it is. Right. Or, you know, or, you know, the mother's a literature professor. And it's like, wow, my mother wasn't a literature professor. She was, you know, whatever. And you're just like, wow, that would change my world if that had been the case, or vice versa, you know, or if my mother liked to hike mountains and it's like, wow, I would have had this crazy experience of hiking mountains my whole life. And that would be normal, you know. I really wonder how many people, if you had them really sat them down and gave them truth serum on their deathbed, would say that they,
oh my God, here, take this sodium pentothal now.
I know you're going to die in 5 minutes and you want to say goodbye to your loved ones, but
I need answers.
Yeah. No, I wonder, but I wonder if you could get a real answer out of people, whether most people would say, you know what, I lived my life the way I, you know, the classic sort of, I lived my life my way and there were goods and there were ups and downs and, you know, I wouldn't change a thing, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's what most people say. But is that really how most people feel? I don't know.
The only way I would change things is if those changes wouldn't affect where I am now.
Right. And of course they would.
Right.
If you moved to New York when you were 20 instead of staying in California, you'd be a completely different person. Yeah.
You know, if you and I didn't record episode one in, what was it, May 12th, 2012 or whatever, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. If Nikki hadn't seen the picture of that I took of Jonathan Gorman and told you about me or whatever, right?
Yep.
It was his birthday the other day, my friend Jonathan Gorman, if he's listening. Hello, Jonathan.
Is he still in Palm Springs?
Still in Palm Springs, owns a company that does like high-end Apple consultation stuff. And now they're moving into all kinds of other stuff and he's very successful. Anyway,
Jonathan, if you're listening, and thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah. So, you know, we're here because of a guy that I met in a practice room at Berkeley because we were doing a sound alike of Billy Joel's Big Shot and I needed a drummer, and a kid who was in my class said, you should talk to my roommate, Jonathan Gorman. He's up there in that practice room. And, you know, I walked up and I sat and I watched him playing through a glass door for 5 minutes. And then when he was done, stopped for a minute, I knocked on the door and I talked to this guy. And because I knocked on that door, you and I are here 20 years later.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like, and there's and this ping who, pong effect. What was it? Some friend of Fielding's or some friend of yours. You were in D.C. shooting.
And
you needed a subject.
So a friend of Fielding's is married.
Like friends with your sister or something.
Yeah. A friend of hers from high school or whatever it is married to an old friend of my sister's from high school. Just by chance. And I said I was going down to DC and I needed subjects. And So and I shot her, and that's why she's got into the show and became friends with us, and there you are today, right? So this is the way things work. And there are plenty of situations like that where maybe not in this case, but in other cases where you're like, man, I really wish I had never met that person. That, you know, that person really messed with my life, or wow, that person, you know, stole all that money from me, or whatever it is, right? But all of those things added up to where you are today. So it's really difficult to separate this stuff. It becomes this just nest of wires that you can't, you know, but it's your nest of wires, you know?
Yeah. And I'm protective of it.
Yeah.
You know, right, wrong, good or bad, this is where it led.
Right. And I think that there are, unless you made a really, you know, unless somebody is a, you know, recovering drug addict and they were just like, man, I really wish I hadn't started that. You know, there aren't that many situations where somebody didn't learn something from an experience, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with any of this stuff.
We never know. We never know.
Do you have any? You have any final thoughts, or you? Or so? Do I mean, we wax poetically for long?
Go enough? On about it for another month. Yeah, but it's yeah.
I think yeah. about a lot of that stuff lately. Like I've had a few. I've had like 2 or 3 weeks where I've been kind of, I don't know, like not sad, but like strangely sort of just depressed, and I don't know mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing specific, and there's nothing going on in my life that is, you know,
it's just this general malaise.
Yeah, that I'm just like, I'm between things, whatever things are. Yeah. You know, and it's like, how do you, I mean, you and I have talked about that a lot. Like, you can't force it to start again. You can do stuff, and hopefully something will catch on, you know, something will precipitate from that piece of dust in the air. Or, you know, the little ice crystals will form on the speck of dust. But,
right.
you know, it's like you're waiting for that supersaturation point.
Yeah. The last several, you know, weeks have been, or maybe it even goes further. I don't know. But it seems like the last, my writing the last several weeks has been more sort of thematic in terms of doing, just doing, and letting go of, or trying to let go anyway, of what's on the other side of doing.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, I can't worry about it. I can't know about it.
And you famously say, you know, you don't get to decide what something is after it's done.
Yeah. And I believe that.
Right.
I believe that.
So,
you know,
is your worry always that other people are going to think that something is bad, or that you're going to think that something is bad?
Probably. I probably worry more about what I'm going to think of it.
Right.
You know? You know, I'm not one of those people, and you and I both know people who are leapers, regardless of whether or not they can see the ground or whether or not any ground even exists.
Sure.
They're just like, whatever. Appear. Yeah, here, yeah. let's do it, and yeah, we'll figure it out later.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a Steadicam operator, you know.
Mm.
And he has
Does he wear the big harness and everything?
Well, yeah. So he has like a mid-level. He does, but he doesn't own one of the giant rigs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this question of, okay, if I can get a small business loan for $40,000 and I can go all in on the rig that I need, because that's what the high-end ones cost when you really get into it, you know.
Right.
It's like, well, then I could be making $2,500 a day or whatever it is, right? And there are only 200 of these guys on the East Coast or whatever. So there is work. I know the people who could give me work, but I'm also taking out a loan for $40,000, right? I mean, this is, you know, this is a big...
Yeah. And what happens if...
There's no guarantees.
6 months from now, the industry shifts and people start using handheld gimbals.
Exactly.
Or those little Movi rigs.
Well, the irony of... You're exactly right. But the irony of that is that did happen a couple of years ago and everyone's moving back to Steadicams.
Mm.
In many ways. So in some ways, there's this renaissance resurgence of Steadicam. So it's like... Well, why aren't I in the right place to grab onto this thing? You know?
Right, right.
And but it's still a risk, right? But then, you know, I was talking to my friend Andrea in London, and she was, you know, she was just talking about, she's a big believer in leap and a net will appear.
Hmm.
You know, which I love from a romantic point of view.
Right.
But that's also terrifying.
But then reality creeps in and goes, no net.
Yeah.
There's still no net.
You're going to die.
You've been falling for 42 minutes. There's still no net.
This is that bad scene in the comedy movie where the guy wants to crowd surf and there's no crowd there when he jumps.
Right. Thud.
He's just on his back, like as if he wouldn't just destroy. You'd be dead in reality.
Nobody decides to crowd surf without a crowd, you know? Yeah.
Right. But it was really dark and you couldn't see. So you know, and that's always my terror, right? But how many, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry we're going on about this, but like, have you ever actually taken a real big risk like that and it failed and you regret it later? Like, have you been bitten and therefore you end up gun shy.
No,
or,
no, right. Bill, and that's the irony of it.
Right,
every time it's never happened. Something right. has always. It may not have worked out the way I expected or wanted yep. or you know desired necessarily, but I never tried something and ended up you know, I don't know, sleeping in a refrigerator box behind a 7-Eleven or something.
Right. Well, there's always time.
Thanks.
They have 7-Elevens in Maryland. No, but you're right. Yeah, exactly, right? But you know, and realistically, how big of a leap could you or I take as middle-class, middle-aged white men yeah. on the East yeah. Coast of America that we'd be in such trouble that we couldn't get out of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, yeah, okay, I'm $50,000 in debt. That sucked. But
in the moment, it's all that you can see.
Yeah.
In the moment, it's the oxygen that you can't breathe.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
It is a weird thing that, you know, sometimes I was listening to a podcast about some historical thing. I can't remember exactly what it was. I listened to a number
of them. Oh, yeah, I know that one.
I listened to a bunch of them. But anyway, the point was, it was like they were talking about the Teapot Dome scandal or something, you know, like.
Okay.
Anyway, I feel like sometimes we look back. Oh, that's what it was. Last night on the train, I was reading about the what's the thing where we gave a bunch of money after World War II? The Marshall Plan.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading about the Marshall Plan, as one does, and thinking, wait, was that loans or was that grants, essentially? Like, and did we ever get paid back? I was just like,
right.
I don't know enough about it. So I pull it up on Wikipedia. We're riding home on the train last night. And I'm reading all about how, you know, the people in the time, there were people in America at the time who were saying, you know, you're giving billions of dollars to Europe. Why don't you spend that here? Or, you know, all the sort of isolationist kind of things, you know. And then there were people who said, oh, yes, the British, you know, the European economies exploded after that. But in hindsight, it really had little to do with the money America did. It had to do more with this, or maybe America helped a little bit. But, you know, and all these like differing opinions about it. Right. And you think, man, if 50, 60, well, in this case, 80 years later or 70 years later, we still can't have a clear picture of what difference this action made. How the hell are you supposed to know in real time or understand that, like, oh, right. we're making the wrong move now, or we're making the right move now? Who knows?
Right.
You know, all you can do is the best thing you can do at the time. You could do what you think is right in the moment, and that's all you can ever ask of yourself.
And I'm trying to be better about that. I'm trying to be better about listening and acting rather than listening and ignoring, I guess.
Ignoring yourself or ignoring other people?
Myself.
Yeah. 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 It's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I look at the people who can just act and don't really think about it too much. It's like, no, just me, you know, so sounds so silly, but I was at a friend's show the other day and we had suggested, Long Way Home by Tom Waits.
Yep.
For a friend of ours who's a singer, my friend Karen Dahlstrom, who's amazing. And
wait, you were at like a karaoke thing?
You know, our friend is a singer-songwriter, and so they do these shows every once in a while at this club near us, this bar near us. And she was playing, and like a few weeks ago, Heather and I were listening to that tune and said, oh man, Karen could probably do a really great version of this, because she occasionally does covers. And so we sent her an email, and then we went to the show the other night, and she's like halfway through the set, and she goes, oh, this next one was suggested by Bill Wadman. I was like, wow, wait a minute, you know. And she sang the song, and it was really great. And what was the point of this thing? sorry, I went off on a tangent. And but you know, it's like these people who can just, oh, they're just going to get up there, and they're going to make music, and they're going to do it, and it's okay, and they're not obsessing about it every single time. You know, there's something really beautiful about that, you know?
Yeah. Completely foreign to me.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love that. Anyway. Where do you want to go from here? You want to talk about announcements, or do you want to get on with other stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think we should talk about. So, I think we've made a collective decision, gang, to wrap up the show soon.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that's fine. Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and
You and I have flirted with it over the years.
We flirted with it. Yeah. And I think for me, I can't speak for Bill, but I think for me, I feel like this show is going in one direction, and I feel like some of the other things that I'm wanting to explore are going in another direction.
Right.
Collectively. And this show is the only thing currently still going in the first direction. Not that it's a bad direction, it's just different. And, you know, like I said, I can't speak for Bill, but I feel like I've gone about as far as I can go.
Right. Right. So, and it's funny because there are, I mean, you and I have discussed this before, and there have been times in the history of the show that you and I have, sort of come to what felt like a conversational cul-de-sac.
You know? Yeah.
And then, you know, we turn around.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it was a really good show. And then we were like, holy shit, what just happened?
Yep. Yeah. And last week was a pretty good show, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it you know, it comes and goes, and that's just a reality. But, yeah, so we're gonna try new stuff. I don't know. So what did we decide? We decided a couple more after this, and we'll...
Yeah, maybe do one more sort of regular episode, and then... 324 would be a Q&A.
A
17-hour Q&A, yeah. So if you have questions about anything, hopefully related to the show, let us know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how people react to this.
Yeah.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. You know, it certainly doesn't mean that Jeffrey and I can't get on microphones at another point in time. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, but yeah. So we'll give that a shot. Crazy.
Yeah.
So big changes afoot.
324 will be the last
324 have any meaning?
3, 2, 5 and it's 9. Number 9? No, I don't know.
No one interesting died then. Doesn't have any photographic thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll have to.
Well, now it does.
Yeah. The Wikipedia entry for 324 is now going to say the total number of episodes of On Taking Pictures podcast. How many shows have, other than straight news shows, have gone 324 episodes?
Well, and 324 episodes with just two people.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of shows like, you know, Howard Stern's been going a long time. You know, Ibarra NX has been going like a lot of different kinds of shows that bring in other guests, but with the same two voices, opinions, etc. I honestly, I can't think of one that's just two people.
You know, I think for the next show, you and I should listen to our first show
and go back and talk about it.
Yeah,
episode one. What is that?
Or you know, how much we've changed in 6 years?
Yeah,
or how our opinions have shifted in 6 years?
Oh, I think they've gone over and back again many times.
Yeah.
May 10th, 2012,
which kind of makes you question the whole meaning of a line that you're jumping over in the first place if you end up jumping over and back again so many times.
Yeah,
you know, well, what does that line mean at all then? Why do we even listen to each other's opinions if, you know,
I mean, I think that there have been changes. I think that there has been growth. I think there has been realization. I think there has been, you know, still some of the same questions, but certainly some have been answered.
Yeah. I think we've answered all the questions.
That's right.
Yeah. What's the question for 42? We've answered that one.
Yeah.
Meaning of life, the universe and everything. Which camera you should buy? We answered that one.
Did we though?
Does anyone ever?
Did we answer that? I missed that one. What episode was that again?
Yeah, he's like, I'd like to go listen to that one. That might be
so. Basically, now I've got what was the joke? If Jeffrey buys a camera, the show has to end. So I've got 3 weeks to make a decision.
Yeah, what are you going to buy?
Well, I will tell you.
I almost bought an X-Pro 2 yesterday.
Well, the sale ended yesterday.
Oh, was there
at B&H? Yeah, they were $13.99. Now they're back up to $15 or $16.99.
Oh, that would have been a good deal.
A listener. Oh gosh. Who was it? Shields? Adam? Is it Adam Shields?
It was an email of some kind. What was this?
No. On Instagram.
Ah.
Andy Shields. I'm sorry.
Oh, Andy Shields. Sorry, yeah, Andy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Anyway, when I mentioned at one point that I was looking at the EM1 Mark II, the Olympus, and mm-hmm. he said, "Hey, a buddy of mine has an affiliation, he's a camera store, and they do a lot of work with Olympus. Let me put you in touch with him and see what can happen." So Andy was kind enough to set me up with introduce me rather to the Olympus rep. Mm-hmm. Who then passed on my introduction to the Mid-Atlantic region Olympus rep.
Okay.
And long story short, they are going to send me an EM1 Mark II and a 12-40 f/2.8 lens.
To keep or play with?
No, just for a month.
Oh,
for
okay.
A month.
Yep.
Just so I can run it through its paces. And what I'm going to do, and this I'm very excited about this, I'm going to take it down to
Bayou Way.
Bayou Way. My friend Jackie is going to, we're going to do a comparison of the high res mode, the 80 megapixel high res mode,
sure,
against the Hasselblad H5, I think, is the 80 megapixel.
I think the Hasselblad's going to win. That's my bet.
And the phase 100 megapixel. Mm-hmm. So we'll be using, everything will be exactly the same. Same lights, same exposure, same everything. We're going to shoot and swap the cameras off of one of the big camera stands that they have down there. And I'm very curious to see how they will all shape up.
Sure. I mean, those high res modes don't actually give you a file that's that big. Isn't it sort of like more the equivalent of a file that big? It doesn't actually give you a thing that's X pixels by.
Yeah, it does.
It does?
Yeah. Okay. No, it's like, you know, what is it? 9,500 pixels across.
Oh,
does
it actually give you that? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I'll be interested to see what that says too.
Anyway, so pending the outcome of the loaner from Olympus.
you might actually finally make a decision.
Yeah, the EM1 might be my
Wait,
my
when
camera.
Did you buy the other one?
The X-Pro 2?
Yeah, the X-Pro 1?
You know, the X-Pro 1, rather, yeah. I don't know. But I will say, I got is this the lens copy? Is that the thing that you put in there? Is that what this is
about?
Yeah. Okay. So can we move, just swap those? I got a 35 mil F2. I bought one, and it wasn't sharp. I did a couple tests from about a foot and a half away, and it just wasn't sharp. And it wasn't the ghosting kind of sharpness problem that I've read about. It looked to me to be more than just spherical kind of aberration. But if you stop down to F4, it was sharper. And then at about 4 feet away, it was sharp in both cases, or sharper.
Right.
So I sent it back and got another copy, and this one is, there's a little bit of ghosting, which again is indicative of these lenses. The 23 mil, the Fujifilm 23 does it, the 35 does it, the X100 series, the whole series does it. In fact, Patrick says that his
X100S. Birds do it, bees do it.
Yeah. his 100S is not sharp at F2, regardless of how close or far you are from the subject. It's just not sharp at F2, full stop.
Sure.
He's got to go down to 2.8 or 4. But there was I posted a comparison on Instagram, and there's a pretty dramatic difference between the first lens and the second lens. And all that to say, just, you know, check your lenses. Just because they're brand new doesn't mean that they're, you know, perfect out of the box.
So, like, check your ego at the door.
Check your lens at the mount. But it, you know, so all that to say, the 35 F2 is night and day in terms of speed difference between the 1.4.
Right. Like, so do you need a new camera at all?
One of the projects coming up requires video, and I need to do, you know, my camera doesn't shoot video.
The stuff that you printed, the painting photos you printed, were those ones you had done at down in the studio?
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I'm curious about that to see how it's gonna turn out. And it looked like, remember the I sent you a photo from the Adorama pics that got printed. It was like, you were right, it was about a half stop.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I think it ended up being like 0.57 or 0.55.
Did you reprint?
No, because I was gone for the weekend.
Okay.
And I've got some ink coming. What's today? Wednesday? Should be here today or tomorrow. So
you're going to print it home.
I'm going to print it on, because I don't like the paper. I don't like that Fuji crystal matte.
Those are actual C-print papers as opposed to, you know.
So I will probably print them on the Palo Duro matte from Red River, because I really like that paper. It's got a little bit of texture to it.
Yeah. It's all this stuff is so complicated. It's still, the whole printing thing is still a pain in the neck. That never seems to work,
it really
right?
Is. It really
and no
is.
One's ever got a good answer for it. It's always like, oh God, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about one of our sponsors real quick before we go on, because we're running long already, Jeffrey. We haven't even gotten anything good yet.
We got into plenty good.
Actually, that was all good stuff, but it wasn't on. It wasn't planned.
Wasn't in the notes. We didn't get to the notes last week either.
Man, we're just
I'm feeling jiggity fresh, Bill. What do you got for me?
Hold on a second. Is this like senioritis? Is that what's going on? That we're just skipping the notes?
Skipping. Yeah, I think it is.
You like jiggity fresh books, as do I.
I do. I feel like I've lost, almost 200 hours. Well, I really do.
You have, Jeffrey, because you spent 192 hours every year that you waste doing your invoices yourself and sending them off to clients and having to follow up on whether or not they paid your invoice or whether they're going to pay you in Canadian dollars or American dollars or freedom dollars or, you know, whatever else.
Or freedom fries.
Remember freedom fries and freedom toast? Man, I'm going to get some French toast after this. Our friends at FreshBooks up in the great, great white north. Is that what they call it? Canada?
They used to. I don't know if it's still a thing.
They're in Toronto, I do believe it is. And you know, they make ridiculously easy cloud accounting software for freelancers. And they'll help you reclaim that 192 hours a year so you don't waste days and days and days. It's two working days a month that you're spending doing paperwork that you don't have to do. Let FreshBooks do it for you. They simplify tasks like invoicing, tracking expenses, and getting paid online. They've got clean, professional-looking invoices you can send in about 30 seconds. With literally two clicks, you can set yourself up to receive payments online so people can just pay your invoice straight from the invoice they get in their email. You just click on a link. They pay with their credit card. You got money. They're all done. They don't have to deal with it, and you don't have to wait 90 days or 120 days or 630 days in order to get paid. You can take pictures.
Is there a little alert? Can you set up where it's like, you've got money?
Yeah, I'm sure you could. Steve Gibson on Security Now has a thing that goes yabba dabba doo every time somebody buys a copy of SpinRite.
Nice.
Yeah. You can take pictures of your receipts on your phone using the FreshBooks mobile app, and you can make reclaiming your expenses a million times easier. And FreshBooks has been completely redesigned from the ground up, custom built for the way that you work. So get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly. They got this new projects feature which lets you share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. See how quickly things all happen when your conversations live in one place. They'll give you notifications of whether somebody's seen your invoice, whether they've paid it. It's like your own personal assistant for your money affairs. And when you need to invoice a client, FreshBooks can show you whether they've seen it. It's great. It puts the end of the guessing game, so you don't have to worry about it. And they'll send their own late payment reminders. They're automated people. So if you haven't gotten paid in 30 days, it'll send them a note that says, hey, you haven't paid Jeffrey in 30 days, which saves you from having that awkward talk. Yeah. He did what for us? He talked into a microphone? We're supposed to pay him for that? FreshBooks helps you avoid having to have that awkward conversation with your client for past due payments. It's just great. Go check them out. If you're listening to this and you're not using FreshBooks yet, now would be the time to try it. FreshBooks is offering an unrestricted 30-day free trial for all of our listeners. No credit card is required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/ontakingpictures and enter ontakingpictures in the How Did You Hear From Us section. We thank them very much for their support of the show.
Thank you, FreshBooks.
That was a nice little clearing throat, that thing I did there.
Yeah, right. They'll appreciate that.
You know, I've talked to two of my friends. We won't go too deep into this, but I just wanted to put it in here for a minute. I watched it. Okay, I watched it too, the Zappa doc.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I think he is like, you know, he's like a he's like some of the jazz musicians he's that like I really don't get. I can respect the talent, I can respect the ability, or you know, he's like what's the chef from Alinea? Chef Ackett's, Grant Ackett's Alinea in Chicago. I don't understand what the hell that guy's doing with his food, but I can appreciate the skill and the craft that needs to happen to produce it. And I feel the same way about Zappa. I don't understand what he does sometimes.
Right.
But other things that I have heard, I listen to him and I go, that's just genius. And you have to be a genius to be able to use both sides of your brain the way he does, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. He's definitely one of those artists and definitely one of those musicians that I have a lot of respect for because of what they do. I don't generally choose to listen to them. You know, it's like one of those kind of people. I think part of it is, and I was having this conversation with Dan the other day, and I in my head sometimes put Zappa in the same sort of, I feel like he has an overlapping fan base with somebody like Devo, where it's like sort of nerd pop stuff, sort of, you know, like on the edge of what most people listen to, and certain groups of people are drawn to their music. You know, and Dan's like, no, it's completely different because Devo's, you know, simple and catchy and Zappa's crazy. I'm like, well, Zappa's sometimes crazy, but sometimes simple and catchy. But there's also sort of this.
He writes like full on symphony based scores. Right. And
right. And
you're
and,
like, now what do I do with you?
Exactly. Yeah. And I also wonder, I look at somebody like Zappa from an artistic point of view and I say, OK, this is a guy who put out, you know, I don't know what it was, like 77 albums or some ridiculous thing. Right. And he had a fan base and he made a good living and he toured and he sold all these records and stuff. And in some ways he was really ahead of his time because he owned his own pictures or right. I mean his own pictures.
His own
he owned, yeah, he owned like the publishing and everything. He owned his masters early on. Like he sued his record company in the '70s or whatever. And I look at that and I go, how does this guy, listening to his music, are there enough people that found him that he has a fan base? Because this stuff is weird. You know, there's a lot of Zappa music.
It's really hard to understand what's going on.
Yeah. And you think, how could this guy possibly have millions of fans and how did he find them? Because this stuff is not mainstream at all.
Right.
You know, and yet Zappa's held up as like one of these guys, you know, and I'm just thinking, how does somebody go from being an obscure sort of art rock musician to being the art rock musician of the 50s and or of the 70s and 80s that people still talk about, you know, and point to as a thing? And I don't think that this documentary necessarily answered that question for me. You know, it like talked about it and explained all this stuff, but it's the fact that this guy was successful and I don't take anything away from his genius or his music and any of that stuff. I'm just surprised in the world's market that this actually found an audience that was that big.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I went back and listened to some of the other music and what was the record? Rat something.
Hold on a second. Rat Tamago?
No.
That's a tune. What era was it from?
It was like when he first disbanded the Mothers.
Ah, okay.
And did a solo. His basically his first solo record, I guess.
Okay, all right. Well, keep going.
Well, it didn't really sell very well. It didn't really. It wasn't really popular amongst his fans because it was sort of more melodic and more. Not serious, but less experimental.
Yeah.
Hot Rats. Okay. That's what it is. Hot Rats.
Yeah.
But I think in the canon of what little I've listened to of his music, I find that one something that I can grasp onto because I understand it. Because I can go, oh, this is a melody. I can follow that. Whereas the more experimental stuff, I just don't understand what's going on. And am I supposed to appreciate this as music, as theater, as performance art, as all of that?
Right.
Simultaneously?
Why are you trying to define it, Jeffrey? You know,
I don't know because I'm trying to understand it.
I used to get picked up by a guy named Jeff Wilcox to go to school in the morning, like sophomore, junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. And every morning he used to play Joe's Garage. On the thing. And like, I have that song in my head on loop sometimes, you know, and I go, oh yeah, I get this. This is catchy. This is interesting. I understand what he's doing here. But like, I still, there's like, it just goes straight past me sometimes, somehow, you know? I find it fascinating. And then somebody wrote in, sent us in that link to a podcast by, where's the Zappa thing? Did you see that one?
I did. Yeah.
I listened to that guy's podcast too. If I can go find it, I think it was in a tweet or something, or I forget where it was. Anyway,
I think it was last. Yeah. I think it was a tweet.
It was a tweet. Send us it was a tweet, 'cause the guy wrote back. So it was a podcast. I'll have to find, where these two guys go and they take a musical artist and they kind of walk through their entire career. And both of them sort of kind of came to this understanding of like, oh, I started understanding Zappa around this album. And, you know, I listened to this and I listened to that. And of course, you're not going to listen to everything. And you know, to me, that stuff is, I find it interesting. And yet it still doesn't add up for me, even after listening to the guys explain how it should add up for me, you know. And I should theoretically be one of the people who should be a nerd about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I went to the music school.
There's
that is
so much. Give me the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John of Frank Zappa. Like, give me the four records that I should listen to.
Yeah.
That sort of epitomize.
Right. Yeah.
What he was doing, the message, yeah, if you
well,
will.
You can go to All Music. We'll have to find that. It's Soundography, episode number 12, Frank Zappa. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And will there be people today that are the same as Zappa, right? Who are these like edge cases people that people love, you know?
It's harder and harder because you listen to it, there's no hit there. And
right.
Music today is so hit driven.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could find a SoundCloud audience or a YouTube audience being sort of experimental and avant-garde or just plain weird. I think that's where you'd find your audience, but I don't think you're going to find it in the record label system.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Hot Rats, Overnight Sensation, Uncle Meat, and We're Only in It for the Money, which are all from the late 60s, early 70s, are the albums that All Music says are the picks.
Oh, okay.
Which
what is this site called?
Allmusic.com. You never been there?
I don't know this site.
Oh, this is the deep stuff. This is like, oh, I want to know.
Are you going to rabbit hole me right now?
Oh God, you will fall down so deep. If you want to know who the mix engineer was in some obscure album from the 70s, like, they will have credits that aren't in the actual album in here.
So what did you just look up Frank Zappa?
Yep. Look up Frank Zappa and then you will get a list of all of his records. And there'll be an All Music rating and a user rating of that album. It's like Rotten Tomatoes, sort of, for music.
Okay. So then how did you come to that? These are the four that you should...
You see the ones over on the left-hand side that have the little A, like the little antenna icon, the big A antenna icon on the left-hand side on the discography page? Some of them are highlighted in blue, some of the rows.
Albums? Okay.
Yeah, go to discography, and then yeah, you'll see all the albums and like have a list. And it's interesting because they'll choose. And sometimes I find I disagree with them about which albums are the ones of a particular musician. You know what I mean? That I'd like to listen to. You know, that I would say are the ones. But it is kind of interesting.
Okay, so it's got the little
antenna icon.
Yeah, little antenna. Those are the ones that they recommend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you know, It's, you know, it's really interesting. I don't know. I find people like Frank Zappa fascinating because, and this could go back to the beginning conversation of the myth making. Sometimes it feels like people talk about Frank Zappa as if he was some sort of unbending god of the avant-garde. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to take on the record industry and I'm not going to care about making hits and I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going to make what I want to make and I'm the counterculture all in one person.
Why is there not a site like this for art?
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, here's everything this artist or photographer did.
Here's Jackson Pollock, and here are the 15
here are the
that you
four things that you need to know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You've never seen All Music? This is out of control, right?
I think I just found my next project.
Yeah. Jeffrey, you don't have that much time left.
Yeah, right. Wow. And there it is.
I'm just saying that, like, that's a deep dive.
Wow.
Anyway, interesting. I just thought it was interesting. I thought other people might find it interesting. Good for some fun stuff. Frank Zappa, by the way, what, died at 53 years old?
I think that's about how old he was. I watched...
Yeah, 40 to 93. So yeah, 53 years old.
I watched that interview, 52. The last interview he gave from the hospital bed.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
It is. It is pretty rough.
But he's still talking about it in a very... He didn't seem like he would change anything.
No, I mean, kind of bringing it full circle. I mean, here's a guy who's lived the life that he lived and did this final interview from, maybe we can find a link to it, from a hospital bed. I don't remember how soon after that did he die?
Pretty soon.
It was pretty soon after that. Anyway, yeah. So really didn't seem to regret his life at all.
No.
Or didn't speak to really... to my recollection anyway, regretting anything.
Nope.
As Bill said.
I think it was just a matter of, you know, the doctors tell me I have this much time left. Let's see what I can make in that much time.
Yeah.
Which is, oh God.
I mean, it's kind of how Freddie Mercury told the band when he was diagnosed, you know, yeah. 'Cause Queen famously fought on every record, you know, yep. Especially later on. And Freddie kind of, in Brian May's recounting of it, Freddie brought everybody into a room and said, look, I've got this thing. There is no cure. I just want us to put all of our shit behind us and, you know, make as much music as we can in the time that I have left.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they did.
Yep. It's like the Beatles when they made Abbey Road. Because Let It Be was such a nightmare and they finished it and then they didn't release it. And they were like, look, we're going to break up. We know we're dying. Like, let's get together and do it like we used to do it. And that's Abbey Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's basically going to be like concert. The next episode of Jeffrey and I Show.
Yeah. Yeah. The next episode is Abbey Road. This is Let It Be.
This is Let It Be.
Wow. Anyway. So does that mean 224 is the rooftop show? Should we do it outside?
Ding, 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 ding. JoJo was a man who thought yeah. He was a loner. Yeah. There's another example. The rooftop show, they played some of those songs two or three times on the rooftop yeah. to get a good take.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting when you watch the whole thing and you see all these like old men climbing up ladders to get to the roof to see stuff happening. If you guys haven't seen the Beatles rooftop show... I'll put a link on the show in the show notes for the 37 or longer than that, the full version. Yeah, it's like I'll find them.
It's like 40 something minutes.
Yeah, something like that. I'll find it and put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. Yeah,
21 minutes.
37:58.
Oh, is that actually the one you're looking for? No, it's not. That's a fake one. That from 2015. That's a recreation thing, I think.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's a fake Beatles.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. It is. My mistake.
I'll put the there's a Daily Motion version of this thing. I'll just put somewhere. I'll find something like that.
Oh yeah, here 21:47.
Yeah,
something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, I like the Beatles. They're good. Remember the Beatles?
The first Beatles. Time I looked in his eyes, it was like first time I heard the Beatles.
God, again, another amazing. You ever looked into his eyes? It's like the first time I heard the Beatles.
If you haven't rented it or
like
watched it or owned it,
he's like the sweetest man ever.
Super bad. Go watch it.
Ugh, it's so
funny,
good.
funny movie.
So right. All right. Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about before we wrap this up. So can we, you have anything else to say about Zappa other than,
No, I mean, I find him really interesting. Again, it's just, I feel like it's a lot of his stuff is just beyond my musical understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Hey, you put in this, where'd you find it? Did you just bump into this on PDN?
PDN. I it's one of the sites that I go to, so it pops up in my feed.
Yeah.
And they ranked, the article is called The Best Cameras for Color Reproduction Ranked.
Yeah.
And they go through, basically trying to get the lowest delta E value is how I read it between what's captured and what's saved.
Yeah. So they accurate? Were taking pictures of a color checker target. And then comparing, yeah, what was shown to what? But how did they use just the defaults in the camera as JPEGs, or were they doing RAW? I don't quite understand the methodology.
That's not clear.
Okay, all right.
Here with the knowledge of the RGB color space, they converted the RGB data to CIE lab color space. Based sure. on the lab color space, they calculate error and differences in brightness, saturation, and color tone. But it doesn't. It doesn't list whether every camera... Oh, wait. No. Here we go. I'm sorry. My mistake.
Where do they say it?
Sets the camera color space to sRGB using the factory default for the color profile. Well, that still doesn't say whether it was a RAW or a JPEG.
Right. And what
and RAW has no color space unless you give it one.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they're shooting with any of these Fuji or Sony or whatever it is, there's all the different shooting profiles you can shoot. It's like, which one did you use? The neutral one? Well, how do you know that's neutral? And, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, they shot all this thing and, you know, the new Sony cameras, the A7R3 came out good.
Yeah, A7 III came out on top for them.
They like the Fuji ones. They like the little Leica CL. You know, it's all the
But here's what's weird. If they like the XE3 and the XE3, the XH1, and the X...
All the same sensor, all the same
tech.
Yeah,
the same sensor. So, yeah, it's very
Why
strange.
Would they be that different? Yeah, yeah. I don't know. And, I mean, you put this in here, and then I put below it, you know... what is correct anyway. You know, I mean,
yeah,
yes, there's
and I'm
the
glad
idea,
you followed that up. Yeah.
You know, you can use tools that Adobe makes and tools that other people use where you can buy a Great Tag Macbeth color checker chart or a QP card. Somebody wrote in the other day, and it's interesting that you put this in here because I wrote this article on Medium, about a year ago about buying the Pentax and all the stuff that I'd figured out about it and things that I'd learned. And even though it's a pretty weird, rare camera, there's like 5,000 people have read this article that I wrote. And a bunch of people have commented on it, including a guy recently who talked about how he went and ended up creating profiles, custom profiles for his camera using the QP card 201, which is, you know, this product. It's very similar to the Great Tech Macbeth, and they have software, and you can go in and you basically take a picture of a color chart, and then it basically makes a profile based upon how right or wrong the picture came out. It like compensates for it, and you can create these color profiles, and you can put them in Lightroom or whatever. And recently, I was in a situation where I didn't have Capture One with me, and I tried to use Lightroom for my Pentax camera, and oh my god, I had such a hard time getting any colors that I liked at all. So you also get in this question of, well, what raw rendering software you're using, and does it matter really that it's objectively correct if you find it pleasing? You know, that whole argument.
Well, and this is worth noting that this is for stills.
Yes.
You know, if you get into video, well, now you're coloring for Rec. 709, not Adobe RGB or sRGB, right. Rec. 709's got a way smaller gamut than either of the two of those.
Yeah, and with video specifically, my God, you could get away with toning stuff that would look stupid in stills.
Yeah, and it looks just fine.
And there's a lot of lighting and shadow stuff that you see in movies and TV, and I was watching something with Conrad the other night. I said, pause it for a second. I said, look at the shadow on that woman's nose right now. Could you imagine if anybody ever took a still and was okay with that shadow,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's just something you can't do, right, in stills. But it does get to this question of, like, if you want to get objectively correct, you can do things to calibrate your own personal camera. But then, you know, some people really like the skin tones out of Canon cameras or whatever it is. I like the skin tones of my camera with the Capture One software. I think that's way more accurate, you know, whatever accurate means. I find it more pleasing and I get a result that I want. So it is interesting that PDN did this, but it's so difficult without getting really deep into that methodology. What does any of that mean?
Right.
You know, I don't think that there's a good answer for... You know, great. Okay. So out of the box, this random Sony camera is the closest, lowest delta E. But then there's a lot of other people who say, yeah, but I don't like the way Sony cameras make my pictures look.
Right.
You know, and look at all the film that we used all these years. None of the film, no films are accurate.
Yeah.
They're all over the place, which is why we choose to use, you know, Portra VC versus, you know, Kodachrome.
Or
versus
any of the like you mentioned earlier, the picture profiles, whatever camera you're using, they've got these picture profiles for a reason because very few people, relatively, use just sort of, you know, straight out of camera default color.
Yeah. Whatever accurate means. It's such a difficult thing to describe or even define, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. And then, you know, if you're shooting in, you know, tungsten light, or you're shooting in shade, or you're shooting in all these crazy different white balances, theoretically, you know, different color lights.
Right.
You know, back in the day when we were all shooting daylight balance film, and you shot somebody in under a tree, you were all right with it shifting in a certain way because that's the way it looked under a tree. And now we correct for that. You know what I mean? To get gray. Or you know, all the pictures that you ever saw of your parents at a party in college or whatever it is were shot either maybe with a flash or maybe just with lights in a room. And so they're dark and grainy and yellow because it was tungsten.
Or mixed light.
Yeah, or mixed lighting.
You've got an incandescent light on the nightstand, but or on the coffee table or something, but you've got fluorescence in the kitchen or something.
Yeah. Fluorescence in the kitchen. I think that's our show title. who was it that I was talking to the other day? Claude and I were sitting outside yesterday, and we were talking about some movie. Oh, we were talking about The Post. Did you watch
The Post? I still haven't seen. No, I want to. Okay. I really want to. But
well, there's
I still
courtroom
haven't seen it.
Scenes where, you know, it's very Kaminsky, where it's like where the light is beautiful coming in through these giant windows. You know, it's probably these giant 18K lights with diffusion outside the windows, you know. So it's like these shafts of light, and there's shadows in the corner. It's like, listen, in a 1970s courtroom, it was probably overhead fluorescent lights.
Yeah.
Like, it was not this beautiful.
It wasn't daylight
thing coming
balanced. It wasn't.
No.
Yeah.
It was this really ugly. It was probably in some courtroom where the ceiling was 10 feet up and everyone looked green. You know, like, but we idealize all this stuff and try to get this perfectly correct, beautiful thing. By the way, there is a scene in that movie, if anybody has seen it or wants to see it or does see it, where they're in the living room of one of the newspaper guys going through all the papers that they got from the Pentagon Papers. And I'm not letting anything away of the plot, although it's history, so it's not
great.
Really,
the
plot.
Pentagon Papers. That's what it was.
Oh,
Jesus.
The Pentagon
Thanks,
Papers.
Wadman.
Thanks. You just ruined the show. Where he's got these lights blasting in through the front windows of this guy's house, and you're just like, no light looks like that in a guy's living room. But my God, is that beautiful. It's just everything's just lit and soft and beautiful, and there's a haze in the room, and you're like, oh man, like it's like all of the air in the room is fluorescing on everyone around it, and you go, God damn, you know, it's like bleach bypassed or some crazy you know, process, and the light's beautiful.
Yeah, real life does not look like a Crudson picture.
Yeah. Hashtag budget, you know.
That's funny.
Anyway, also something Claude and I were talking about, he found this really interesting little 10-11 minute interview with Elliot Erwitt. What's this guy's name who does these shows?
I forget his name, but he goes under Three Blind Men and an Elephant, and I've watched a bunch of his stuff.
Some of them are really good. It drives me crazy that like every 30 seconds he puts up a title card and says, Chapter 4, Elliot talks about his time in the war. And then Elliot speaks one sentence, Chapter 5. It's like, you don't need the chapters, dude. Just have an 11-minute thing of you talking to him. Your question sets it up just fine. We don't need the title cards.
Yeah.
That drove me crazy. But seeing these old-timers and hearing them talk is awesome. Always awesome. You know, he's just like, I didn't do that for that reason. I don't know what you're talking about, kids these days, you know. And then the guy says, you know, I think today if Carter Brisson was a kid today, he'd be shooting with his phone. And Erwitt's like, no.
Wrong.
But we'll put this link in the show notes if you want to watch it. It's fun.
And I love Elliot Erwitt's work.
I
love that he has remained sort of cheeky and fun throughout his entire career.
Yeah. In fact, I kind of want to go see this. Is it still at ICP right now? There's a whole Elliot Erwitt in Pittsburgh from 1950 Pittsburgh shots, and they're amazing. It's up until September, May until September. You're going to be up here in the next couple of months?
Perhaps. I just talked to Tom Hoops this morning. He's going to be there next week.
Oh, okay.
Doing some shoots. So I don't know. Are you around?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So what is it? Let's see. ICP. Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. Yeah, that would be fun. Okay.
So we will talk.
Yeah.
So put that in your pipe
bonnet
and smoke it. Elliot Derwitt, good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go to our photographer of the week, but we have to talk about our second sponsor before we do that. And I don't know how you feel about this.
Hello, hello, hello.
It's hello. It's my new pillow.
Yeah.
I like it. I love it.
I like it much more than I did the first night because it was such a different feel. The first night, I was like, you can keep this thing.
Yeah. Have you tried it for a little more?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's grown on you?
And yeah, it is. I think in the same way that like a weighted blanket would grow on me. There's that feel of...
No, that would just lay on you.
Right, well. What do you know?
Whoa.
It's a lot heavier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, okay. Well, here, let me set it up and then we'll talk about it. All right.
Go ahead.
We're talking about Hello Pillow. We talked about them for the last few weeks. We finally got our copies. We've been trying them out for the week.
Yep.
Have you ever tried a buckwheat pillow? Well,
no.
Jeffrey and I have now.
Oh, that's the read.
They're totally different than a fluffy soft pillow that most of us are used to. It's similar to a bean bag, which allows you to adjust its shape and thickness. It supports your neck and head exactly the way you want it to, unlike a traditional squishy soft pillow, which collapses under the weight of your head. Soft pillows allow your neck to fall into a downward bend, adding uncomfortable pressure to muscles, nerves, and discs. And Hollow stays cool and dry compared to pillows lined with feathers or foam. Most pillows absorb and retain body heat and moisture, making the pillow feel warm and humid. Buckwheat tends to breathe better. No more flipping to the cool side of the pillow. And, you know, we got our pillows last week, and I took a nap on it. As I've been saying, I've been looking for a good pillow for years. Like I have a really hard time finding a pillow. What I want is like a rock with moss on it. Like I want a hard thing that doesn't feel like it's not like it's a piece of concrete, but that it doesn't squish down. The other day Claude was over the other day and we were shooting some video for a friend of mine with his Blackmagic, and all I had was this big photo tripod, and every time Claude set up the shot and tightened the tripod down and let go, the tripod just went down like just a little tiny droop on it.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, that's not the shot that I want. I want this up a little bit, you know? And I feel sometimes like pillows are, oh yeah, this is exactly where I want it. And then you put your head weight down on it and it goes, and you're like, no, that's not the angle I want my neck.
Yeah.
Hello, man, you set it up and you like squeeze it and pinch it exactly so you have it under your neck and you can kind of grind your head into a little bit so that the buckwheat stuff like goes up into your like neck curve, you know what I mean? So like support that, and you go, oh yeah, now when I put my head down, it just stays right there where I put it, which is exactly what I've been looking for a long time. So anyway, what you got your 2 cents?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the first night I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it.
Okay.
Again, because it was so different.
So different.
And then because I put it down and then thud, put my head back down on it. I didn't do any of the sort of molding and like anything that it's able to do. And I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But as I sort of morphed it around and moved it around, it's better.
Yeah.
I still miss the coolness of...
Oh, interesting.
Like I like a cold pillow. Like sometimes I'll flip over a pillow at night and it's cold.
Yeah. You like the
and
cold.
And this is a constant.
It's not that it gets hot. It's just it is the temperature that it is. Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I just like something that supports me. In fact, I have been laying on it also on my back where my shoulders are actually on the edge of the pillow. You know what I mean?
Oh, interesting.
Like, so it's not just my head. I'm sort of my whole body from my shoulders up are supported by the pillow.
Yeah.
And it just kind of sits there and supports all of it and doesn't get in. I was like, wow, this is what I've been looking for all this time. So I really like mine. You should try Hello Pillows. Look, if you use two pillows or fold your pillow in an attempt to get proper support, this is a sign that your pillow is not firm or thick enough. Hello support allows you to keep your head and neck exactly where you want them, just like I was saying. And you can remove fill or add fill through the zippered opening so you can adjust the pillow's thickness to your liking. It also allows you to remove the fill so you can wash the case and put it back in again. People have been sleeping on these things for centuries. In Japan, they've been used extensively, and they're relatively popular to this day. You might see them on the pillow menu at fancy hotels. And buckwheat is a more natural way to sleep. What are you laying your head on at night? Perhaps it's a sack of plucked bird feathers or petroleum-based foam or what have you. This is just these buckwheat hulls. And, you know, it's like the waste product of a food thing anyway. It's perfect. And I don't know. I, for one, really love it. And Hollow is made in the United States, you in the US of A, with quality construction and materials. Certified organic cotton case is cut and sewn for durability. The buckwheat is grown and milled in the United States. So here's the deal. Sleep on it for 60 nights. If Hollow isn't for you, just send it back. They'll give you a refund. Go to HulloPillow.com. That's H-U-L-L-O, pillow.com/OTP. And if you try more than one pillow, you get a discount of $20 per pillow, depending on the size. Fast, free shipping on every order, and 1% of all profits are donated to the Nature Conservancy. We thank Hullo very much for their support of the show. And for thanks for sending us pillows.
Thank you for the pillows. We really appreciate it. Yeah.
Who do you got for Photographer of the Week?
Photographer of the Week. I hope I'm pronounced Girma Berta.
Girma Berta.
Girma Berta is a 26-year-old Ethiopian photographer.
Kids these days.
I know. Shoots a lot of street, shoots a lot with his phone, and I think he's also using an X100. I don't know what series, but in some of the photos of him on the streets, it looks like that's what he's using, is a Fuji X100.
Oh, okay.
I love his use of color, and he did a series of these silhouettes.
The silhouettes are where it's at.
Yeah. And so what he does is he'll shoot people in the streets, but then he will create a mask around them and composite them against some sort of color and texture. And no disrespect, I don't know how else to put it, they're very African-looking colors and textures.
Yeah, sure, I get you.
Rich greens and these sort of jewel-tone purples and blues.
Like when you see, like, people in Ethiopia, the clothes colors they wear and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So very reminiscent
you think
of
those
the,
are painted?
Of the fabric. I found something, and I think what he's doing is taking textures and then doing color overlays with different blend modes to get where he wants to go.
Okay.
But really interesting work and just out there doing his thing, you know, really trying to shine a light on his home country and his home culture. He's a contributor to another feed called Everyday Africa, which is on Instagram as well. I don't know, man. I really liked his stuff and thought it was something a little different than what I normally have been drawn to.
Yep. There he is. I see him with a X100 on the street and his phone a lot of times.
Yeah. A lot of it with the phone.
I think a lot of his street stuff is nice. I think the ones where he cuts them out and does the silhouettes are the strongest stuff because they feel like it's different.
Really stands out.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's like, oh, you know, in much the same way that, you know, some of our friends and people we know, they come up with a look and they go, oh, yeah, that's really cool. Like, yep, keep going with that because it sticks out and you notice it. This guy's definitely on that train.
Terrific point of view. Really interesting perspective. Sometimes he's up high. Sometimes he's down low. He's not always at eye level.
Yep.
And it's just kind of a nice reminder for those of you who are out there that do shoot street. Change your vertical position sometimes too, because it really can change the weight and feel of the composition.
A picture not viewed isn't a picture, but a lifeless thing.
Hmm.
Quote on one of the pages that he apparently said.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If a photographer takes a picture in the woods and no one's there to hear it,
no one's there to see it. Yeah. you can find him on Instagram under Gbox Creative. It's not his name. It's Gbox Creative, all one word, and really interesting stuff. So
very cool.
Yeah, thought you might like that.
I do indeed. So if you have any thoughts, give us a call, 347-687-9411. We'll leave us a voicemail. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. Apple Wadman at Jeffrey Sidoris on the Instagrams and Twitters.
Do you want to talk about the thing that we talked about before next time? Is that, do you need some distance or do you not want to talk about it at all?
Oh yeah, maybe we could talk about it. Let me think about it.
Yeah. All right. How's that for a cryptic teaser, listeners? They're like, what the hell are they doing? They've already said they weren't going to do it anymore. What's left?
Yeah, geez. Just shut up already. I didn't want to be your friend anyway.
Right. I'm taking my toys and I'm going home.
I'm taking my podcast app and going home.
I'm out. Yeah.
So we will see you next week, and let us know what you guys think, and we'll talk to you
soon.
Send
in some questions.
Yeah, oh yeah, we need questions for a couple weeks from now. So let's make it a big one, guys. Podcast on takingpictures.com. Talk to you later.
Have a great week.
Bye.